But then there's this theory of like that UFOs are like a shared experience, that like a
mass hysteria.
Yeah, mass hysteria. Yeah. What do you have to say about that?
I understand that mob mentality or herd mentality can create things that seem to be real that aren't real. I mean, you see it in like Facebook arguments and like the Twitter sphere kind of going off on something that starts to take on the sort of contours and shapes of reality, and then you realize it's not, right?
Right.
However, I'm really troubled by the certainty involved in saying, well, those 10,000 people are just having a mass hysteria.
Yeah.
Like, I want to say, sure, if you want to have certainty on that opinion, I suppose so, but I would need to see a lot of work. I would need to see that you've done a lot of work to discount 10,000 voices.
Right. Welcome, folks, to we haven't decided on a name. I'm just going to be right up front. We haven't decided on a name, but you're listening to Theater Network's new podcast. It will have a name eventually, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Only available at theaternetwork.ca. My name is Taylor Chadwick. I'm the marketing and publicity director. My guest today is actor and writer Damien Atkins. Hello, Damien.
Hi there.
Damien is the performer and writer of We Are Not Alone, which is currently running, currently as of the moment that we are recording this.
Yes.
At the Roxy on Gateway. Full disclosure, spoiler alert. If you have not seen the play, we will be talking about the play a little bit and talking about the end of the things that are brought up. So if you have seen the play, this is a nice little kind of debrief from it to get a little bit more information about Damien and some of the things that are talked about in the show. The podcast is a general thing. We're going to talk to artists and staff and patrons and volunteers and board. This is our first episode, so happy to have Damien here. And this kind of comes, I'll be full admission here. We were just talking. I was doing a video interview, and I was just like, we got to get this on audio recording because it's just so, because video, you have to like cut me out and stuff, but it's so nice just chatting with you. So that's kind of where this came out of. So
that's nice. Thank you.
Yeah. So happy to kind of be starting with you as our first guest. So let's get into this. We Are Not Alone is the story of your work in researching essentially and creating a play about UFOs.
Yeah.
So this is kind of got some meta elements to it as you're trying to figure out what you want this play to be about.
Yeah.
When you started out, and you kind of talk about this in the play a little bit, but I'm curious as well, kind of further stories. Did you know that it was always going to be a piece for you?
No. I really tried for it not to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've written solo shows before and have played myself, and I actually at a certain point got really tired of talking about myself. Mm-hmm. And I still am tired of talking about myself. I have real suspicion about whether that's an interesting topic. But I was encouraged to think of it as an opportunity, and I think, you know, obviously I've come around to thinking that there is a way to be explicit about one's personal experience and not be just wanking, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, like, yeah. I just wonder, because like as a younger, when I was working, you know, trying to develop a career and get into theater and stuff like that, and like what I wanted to see was like a play, you know, about like an alien abduction, and like, you know, we go up to the ship and we see what's going on, and we get into this whole big grand epic story. Was like that something that you were like kind of toying with, and like how do you make that work, or did you have no idea at all about how you wanted to approach the topic?
I had no idea. I mean, that's generally how I write, is that I have a kind of topic or a theme or a question that I am sort of going after. And sometimes, and this plays an example of, I have two themes or ideas that I feel in my gut are somehow related, but I don't know how. And part of the process of writing the play is discovering how they are related, mm-hmm. or if they are related. Mm-hmm. And the theory is, I suppose, that makes for an interesting and unexpected play. Like, you know, it's not for me to judge whether I was successful in this case or in other cases, but mm-hmm. that's the theory. And I like that because it keeps me on the hook. It keeps me interested. I think, oh, what are you on about?
Mm-hmm.
And then you write your way into consciousness.
And let's talk a little bit about that, because in the play you talk about how writing a play is a bit of an experience in itself.
Yeah.
was this process the same for you that you've taken with other plays, or was this a, like when you sat down to finally write it, how did it kind of come out of you, and what was that experience? Because we don't really see the results of that experience, but yeah. When you finally had to sit down and write it, what was that experience like for you?
That's a good question. Elements of it were familiar. I used various techniques that I had used before or that I had sort of dabbled with before. I used vocal mask technique, which is something I learned at Grant McEwen College with Ken Brown, and then taught at the National Theatre School. And it's a very particular kind of vocal mask. I don't know anybody else who taught it the way that Ken did, and who now teaches it the way that Paul Dunn and I taught together. But it's a method of creation and of performance. Certainly there's lots of evidence of vocal mask technique in performance in the show, because it is a solo show and vocal mask is a solo technique. I did also, for this play more than before, used a lot of verbatim technique, so recorded interviews, and the last two-thirds of the play is mostly verbatim, actually. So recorded interviews and then embodied them using sort of vocal mask performance techniques.
Now, sorry, can I jump on that
point? You sure can.
I just want to, vocal mask, for those that might not know, can you just explain a little bit about what that is, in loose terms?
Yeah, it's a, so I like to think of it as one part writing, one part acting, one part discipline, right? So it's generally a creation and performance technique for a solo artist. More in particular, in terms of the writing, it's generally based on the idea that you write on your feet, that you create scenes and characters on your feet instead of sitting down at a computer or, you know, a notepad if you're old school.
Right.
And writing kind of from the head. This is really not even writing from the heart, it's writing from the gut. Like your body kind of writes the scene as you're doing it. It's a horrifying thing to do, because you walk into a room with nothing other than an idea, and then you think, well, so what about this? And then you know.
Is there usually someone? Are you alone? Or
you're alone.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Are you filming it? Recording it?
No.
No.
No. In fact, no. That's part of what's crucial about it, is that you don't. The way that we've taught it, and I'm not saying you couldn't make changes to this, because you know, obviously we did too, but like you, you walk in. I mean, you have a general idea or a theme that you're exploring. And then you generally come up with sort of little scene ideas or character ideas or just even a snip of dialogue. And then you just start on your feet and you write a scene. And then the idea is you don't record it until the scene is kind of done, so that through the course of your work session, your body is editing. You know what I mean?
So
you don't actually start to edit with your head until you've come up with something that sort of lives. And you know, often the scene is stupid, it's really bad, right? But then at least you finish it,
right?
And then write it down.
Yeah, you have something to work off of, and then you can write it down,
and then you record it. Yeah.
Yeah,
and then you can start to work more conventionally, editing however you want. The, you know, it works best when you do as much of it on your feet as possible, but certainly the initial creation on your feet.
The characters in the piece We Are Not Alone, there are a lot of them, almost every single one of them is a real person. Did you take photos of people that you talked to, or are you going? Are you creating caricatures of these people? Like the movements that you choose for each of these different characters.
Yeah.
You know, some of them have different ways for us as an audience that we can follow who you're portraying. I'm sure that helps you as well to know who you're portraying.
Yeah.
Were these things that came up because of a memory you had of someone, or did they come up organically from doing this vocal mask work that you're talking about?
Well, okay, let me answer that in a second. I'm just going back to something though, because you were talking about if I wrote this play like other.
Yes, sure.
And
sure.
Let's
put a pin in that.
Well, all I want to say is that, you know, we did a whole research phase on this play, which is mostly the first third, what we call the first act of three, and each act is about half an hour long. And a lot of that material had been assembled in some way. And then we decided we needed to go deeper into our research, or more personal. And so then we decided to go and meet more people, like go into the field essentially and meet people. I'd already talked to people on the phone and that sort of thing, but to like meet people face to face. And so we went and did that. And then the last third of the play, the directive was always like to go deeper, mm-hmm. right? And so we did this sort of research, a certain level of deepness. I don't know if that's a word, is it?
You're a writer, you get it, right?
I made that up. And then we went into the field and talked to people on another level deep. And then the last third of the play, really, it kind of gets so personal that it becomes kind of interior until, for me, the climax of the play is a kind of long moment of silence that happens where you get to hear a little bit what I'm thinking and then you don't. Mm-hmm. So that the journey of the play was trying to go deeper. And eventually we got so deep that it's like, interior and kind of without language, but then we came back from that trip and I sat down in front of a mic like I am right now in front of all the designers and the directors and whatever and just told the story of what had happened, and I talked for about 2 hours and we recorded it and then we had it transcribed, and so then the first bit, the half an hour that we had created plus that bit, was essentially a kind of first draft, and then we started a lot of editing anyways.
That's really cool to know the story because of how you came up with the how you made the play, because I'm sure that, and you kind of talk about this in the play of how much is coming at you and how much information is coming at you that it's hard to just be like, I need to write something. You know, we feel that from you in the piece. Let's go back to the characters.
So, no, I never took pictures. The people that I met, the characterizations are based on mostly what they said, sometimes what I remembered of their accent. But it's mostly like just the essence of them. And then you try to create a simple physicality that explores that essence. You know, were they guarded? Were they confident? Were they loose? Were they tight? You know, that sort of thing. And then the voice, a lot of it is about contrast, actually. You start creating characters knowing that this person is in a scene with this person, so how will their voices be different? And so you end up creating characters based on clarity, just wanting to be clear. But not from pictures. A lot of the characters I don't remember. A lot of characters, they're real people.
Real people, yeah.
A lot of them I don't remember as vividly. And so Christian, who was there for most of the research, would say to me, no, that person had really long arms, or that person kept going off on tangents or whatever.
Let's talk a bit about your and Christian's relationship in the play, because there's some great stuff where I think you're on the patio talking to some guys, and then he arrives, and you're done, with being there. And Christian's
I'm freaked out.
Yeah, and Christian's like, "Let's go, let's explore that further."
Yeah,
was that that's the real relationship that went on there, or are you?
Oh yeah,
totally.
I mean, like I like to say, the play is 99% true. And the 1% is like, who cares? Like it's right. if you knew, like there's a few characters that have been combined into one.
Right.
It's like not a big deal. All the essential stuff and even a lot of the minutiae is like real.
Right.
So yeah, it was an interesting tension. Christian, you know, for people who don't know the play, like I went down to a UFO conference and was meeting all these people, they call themselves experiencers, who've had some kind of experience with UFOs. And I was getting really freaked out. And I started to have a real dialogue about why I'm afraid of everything. I am afraid of everything. And that we do this, we talk about this in the play, like, why am I so afraid that I have these twin impulses? I want to explore this, but I'm also too afraid to explore it. I want to have an experience, but I don't want to have an experience because I'm too scared to. And what was great about Christian is that Christian is not afraid. Or at least he doesn't seem to be ruled by fear.
Right.
So there was an interesting tension there where he kept pushing me and pushing me and pushing me. And I knew he was right. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be like him.
I heard something interesting. Jumping to kind of the end, because we don't have tons of time, and I want to touch on a couple things.
Yeah.
And that's some interpretations of the play that I've heard.
Yeah.
And I heard that, you know, you talk about this play is about belief, and I'd like to touch on that at the end. Mm-hmm. But I also want to touch on, because you talk about in the play, I wanted to write about getting, or maybe I would write about getting older.
Yeah.
I would argue that this play is a little bit about getting older.
Oh, yeah.
Because it starts with this young guy who just wants to be a Jedi and mm-hmm. believes he's got force powers mm-hmm. to a guy who's looking at himself in the grander mm-hmm. picture of the universe and is going, am I special or am I mediocre?
Yeah.
And I would argue that that is about getting older. That
yeah.
you when you're a kid, you preserve this, like, there's magic in the world still. Yeah. And as you get older, that crumbles away.
Yeah.
Was that conscious? That was that something that you placed there knowing, planting that? Or is that just something that kind of a happy accident out of the play?
Well, that was one of the two things that I thought that the play was about. I thought mm-hmm. that the play was going to be about UFOs, and I also thought it was going to be about getting older, because I was having an experience of getting older and like was trying to figure out, how did you become who you are? So yeah, on that level, it was a deliberate question. I didn't have an answer to it, but yeah, for me the experience for me of doing the play is actually much more about getting older than it is about actual UFOs.
Cool.
That it's a, so in that sense, that's what I hope is a little bit more universal, is about like, mm-hmm. has anybody else felt this way? Like, you were a certain kind of kid and now you're a certain kind of adult and you think, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And that I think is probably just the process of getting older.
Yeah. Let's talk about the thing that the play is about for me. Like when I talk mm-hmm. to friends about the show and people about the show, for me, it's, yes, it's about UFOs, but it's about our culture of, I want to say like culture of skepticism and how mm-hmm. we choose to not believe someone when they're telling us. We put ourselves mm-hmm. in someone else's situation before we acknowledge what their situation may be.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And there's a whole, for those of you who haven't seen the show, there's a whole section of the play that is about, a quite hefty section of the play that mm-hmm. is about people in an experiencer circle talking about their stories
yeah.
and kind of how overwhelmed you become by yeah. it eventually.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that nature of belief, and especially nowadays, in today's day and age, and like mm-hmm. the Me Too movement and everything. Mm-hmm. Did you feel that connection as this, the connection to the Me Too movement as it came along, and how do you kind of react as a writer and performer now, having written this maybe before that was all going on, mm-hmm. and then now this is happening and it's very, very relevant?
Yeah. Well, I think a couple of things about that. I think, first of all, being a skeptic, we have to understand the word skeptic a little better. Skeptic doesn't mean that you come from a position of not believing. Right? Skeptic actually means that you apply critical right. reasoning.
Right.
Right. So it's okay on some level to be a skeptic, right? It's okay to think things through and test things. Also, belief, some people in, you know, who are kind of UFO experiencers will say that even discussing it as a matter of belief is insulting, because, you know, belief is, faith is believing in something for which there is no proof. And they would say, well, there's lots of proof, right? And in fact, there is lots of interesting evidence that, whether you think it's conclusive or not is whatever, but it is undeniable evidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, I do agree with you that the play is actually about belief, because it's actually about when somebody tells you a story, how and why do you decide in your own head if you believe them or not? But more importantly, for me, one of the realizations of the play is that that decision that you're making, that matrix that you're doing in your head, is actually visible. And now mm-hmm. it's more visible than ever, because people have platforms in which to opine, right, on Twitter and on social media and Facebook and whatever. And so people's internal belief or not belief or skepticism is now made bare. But even just when you're telling somebody a story, you can tell whether they are believing you or not. And I wrote this play before the Me Too movement. I mean, Me Too has been around for a long,
time.
Yeah.
Yes,
but before the sort of current incarnation of Me Too arrived. But it did, for me, that was the turning point, is that I listened to a lot of women, and many more women than I've actually depicted in the play, I mean dozens of women, tell stories about things that they say have been done to their bodies during these encounters with UFOs or extraterrestrials. And I realized that I was re-narrating all of those stories to account for what they had happened, like to apply some other trauma to them.
Yeah.
and this lady had a miscarriage, or this lady, you know, mm-hmm. and that's why she's saying, oh, the ETs took my baby. Mm-hmm. And I became disgusted with myself and thought, how many women have to tell you about something that happened to their bodies before you'll shut up and listen?
Yeah.
And I think that is that. So that did happen to me at the time in 2014. I kind of thought I need to be a better listener, particularly to women, particularly when they're talking about things that have been done to their bodies. That story has only, or that general idea has become more and more pronounced in the cultural conversation, as it should be, and it's way overdue. And we just decided to continue to privilege that realization in the play, because it's important. And for my money, and this may be a controversial thing to say, but I think, what's the difference? Like, what's the difference when you heard, as I did, dozens of women talk about things that have been done to their bodies by ETs, and dozens of women who talk about things that have been done to their bodies by a sexual predator? What's the actual difference? The imperative, I think, is to just listen.
Yeah.
And to stop re-narrating the trauma in your head. Stop re-narrating somebody else's trauma in your head, because why do you need to do that? Mm-hmm. And I understand in matters of legality, where we're talking about people being punished convicted. It's important, you know. Things have to be analyzed and scrutinized, and it's a serious thing to convict somebody. However, in my personal life, I just realized it's not so important to have an opinion.
Cool.
And when someone tells you a story, do you need to have an opinion? Yeah. Maybe you should just listen.
Great. We're just running low on time here. Mm-hmm. I have one last thing I want to say.
I talk too much.
And that's no, it's fine. What is the... I know what I've heard, but what is the most frequently asked question that you get following the show? I have a feeling I know what it is, and I'd like to know your answer to that question.
Oh, I have two answers.
Okay.
One of them is a bit inside baseball, like you'd have to know the play, but...
That's fine.
Okay. Yep. So the inside baseball answer is people want to know, did you ever follow up with that woman again?
Yes, that's the question that
that's
I have
question?
Heard.
That's the question? Yeah. And the other question I get asked, but the question that I get asked quite a bit is, do you actually believe in UFOs?
Okay, cool. Let's answer what's your answer to the first one? Did you actually follow up with, it's Mary?
Her name is Maria. Maria. Yeah. That's not her real name, actually.
Right, but in the character, yeah. Did you ever follow up with them?
I did. Yeah. And for me, this is not the 1% of the play that is not true. Because I say at the end of the play that I did not, that for months I did not follow up with Maria. And that is true. It took about a year. And the ending of the play came together in that year. And so I do think that emotionally, psychically, the ending of the play is still quite honest. Because after I followed up with her, nothing changed. So she did not back off from her observation. So for people who want to know that.
That you have that otherworldly.
Yeah, I have non-human markers.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. She told me I had non-human markers, ladies and gentlemen, and folks, and non-binary people. She told me I had non-human markers. She did not back off that. In fact, she doubled down and she had lots
of... You had more.
Yeah, she had lots of interesting information. Yeah, she told me lots of things. But that conversation, and I recorded that conversation, and I don't talk about the details of it to anybody, mostly because it got quite personal and very interesting, but also because I realized it didn't change the fundamental state I was in. I was still in a state of, do I believe that or don't I?
Right.
And I realized that's the actual interesting human question.
Okay. Lastly,
mm-hmm.
do you actually like believe in UFOs?
You know what I always say? It's usually men who ask me.
Of course.
It's usually men who want to like pin you down to an opinion.
Yeah, right.
And I take a lot of glee in saying, well, what do you think? Well, no, do you actually believe? I mean, you know, I say, well, I just spent 95 minutes answering that question. I think, well, no, you really didn't answer it. Do you believe or don't you?
No, I think you do. Yeah. I think you do.
What I say is, are there only two positions?
Right.
Is it really a question of do I believe or don't I? Because I think there's a lot of different answers to that, not just two. And and I don't know is a valid answer. It's great. Not an escaping of responsibility.
Cool. That's great. Thank you so much, Damian Atkins, for sitting down with us. And of course, if you are listening to this with time to go see the show, go see We Are Not Alone at the Roxy on Gateway, theaternetwork.ca for tickets and information. But if you listen to this afterwards, you just missed it. But thanks so much, Damian, for sitting down with us. I've been Taylor Chadwick, and my guest, of course, has been Damian Atkins.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.